Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. Well, we're going to be having a very interesting conversation with a gentleman, Robert Moss, who's put together a very intriguing educational, informational, and I would say somewhat controversial book, depending on what your paradigms are, what your experiences have been. Robert has written a number of books, but this one is called Dream Gates, Exploring the Worlds of the Soul, Imagination, and Life Beyond Death. Are you interested? I hope so, because Robert is a fascinating man that has led a very unique and intriguing life, and he's going to share some of that journey with you today. Welcome to the show, Robert.
Good to be with you again, Donna.
Well, you know what? You're a man that has topics for conversation that would be just delightful to introduce at a party, because you would have probably scads of people around you saying, this guy's really nuts. However, I want to ask you some questions.
Funnily enough, I don't actually get that reaction very often at parties or social events. I might, but I don't. It's probably because I talk rather proper, you know.
Oh, I see. That's what that.
I don't sound like a new age. I don't sound like some fringe new age flake, because I'm not. I was actually at a party in New York City, a very fancy party, a fundraiser for something. And the wife of one of the bankers leaned over the table and she said, "What exactly do you do, Robert?" And I said, "Oh, I'm a Paleolithic psychologist." And the conversation just went on as if I'd said something respectable. She didn't notice that Paleolithic psychologist is not a term in common use for a recognized profession. It would mean something like Stone Age soul doctor. So I sort of got away with it that way.
Oh, I love it. You're a master of utilizing words. You remind me of my husband.
You must be a lucky woman if he talks like me.
He doesn't have your
accent.
Tell
him he's a gentleman and a scholar if he can pull that off.
He can. But, he loves to use words. And one of the things that he will do sometimes is that he likes to play with words to see if people are paying attention. And I'll share with you quickly one situation that we had. This was when we had just been married a very short period of time. And we were in a situation where there was this person that was a self-proclaimed guru. And I knew the guy was really a weirdo. And he wasn't even from outer space. He just never had even figured out where he belonged on Earth, much less knowing what to talk about and how to present information well. And he was so phony baloney, it was not even funny. And there was a portion, we happened to be invited to this particular event over which he was presiding, and he was talking and talking and talking, and I just thought, I can't believe that I'm sitting here and listening to this ding-dong. Anyway, he got involved with some things and asked opinions, and my husband started talking, and again, we hadn't been married very long, and there was a break period after their conversations had been finished, and my husband, I said to him, "What in the world are you talking about in there? You didn't say anything for 15 solid minutes, and yet you were rambling on and on and on." He said, "I just couldn't hurt the guy's feelings." Oh, my goodness. So for those of you that have that knack with words of being able to say nothing sometimes, and people going, "Oh, really?" and moving on, it's an amazing talent, I'll tell you. I really have an appreciation for it. But let's talk about you, Robert. You're a man. You have been very dedicated to educating people and dream work, healing, and utilizing the talent of imagination has been a very significant part of your life. And I think that this is so important because in our world today, there is such a disassociation with this. Let my audience know a little bit, because your book is so involved. Dream Gates just takes us into so many different paradigms, which I think makes it very unique. But what was it that triggered your evolution into this unique journey?
Well, it is a life story, Donna. As you can hear, I come from somewhere else, and I don't mean outer space, I mean Australia. I'm a boy from the bush. I grew up in a very conservative period in Australian history, in a military family, where you didn't talk about dreams. The only spirits you acknowledged came out of a bottle. So I didn't have much encouragement in my childhood for talking about the things, at least in the presence of adults, that I now talk about and teach all over the world. However, I had experiences, and what I do relates intimately to what I experienced as a boy in Australia. And let me say a thing quickly about the first peoples of Australia, the Aboriginal peoples. One of their very simple and very clear teachings is this: your personal dreams can take you into the dream time, which is not about the personal subconscious. It's not about any of the things discussed by most Western psychology. The dream time is the place from which the events and situations of our world are emanated. It's the real place. It's the place mm-hmm. of the teachers, of the ancestors, of the God you can talk to, and your dreams can take you there. So I picked up a bit of that by osmosis, the understanding that dreaming is about far more than even most sympathetic Westerners accustomed to sort of Western analytical psychology can understand. But it's the experience, you see. I mean, I died a lot. In those days in Australia, we didn't talk about the near-death experience. Raymond Moody hadn't coined that phrase. A Melbourne doctor said to my mother after I died and came back at the age of 9 in a Melbourne hospital, "Oh, poor kid, he died and came back, didn't he? He's got all these hallucinations now." Well, these hallucinations included the memory of a life in a world beyond this one, which seemed to play out over many years, but played out actually in 9 minutes of ordinary time when I seemed to be missing from my body in an operating theater in St. Andrew's Hospital in Melbourne during an emergency appendectomy. The first person I met in my life who seemed to have some knowledge of these things, who could confirm and validate my experiences, was an Aboriginal kid who was very matter-of-fact about it. He just said, "Oh, yeah, we do that. We get sick, we go to another place. When we get well, we come back." So you see, Donna, since childhood, I've known from my personal experience that there are worlds beyond the physical world. That, by the way, is the teaching of every religion, every spiritual approach, and the quest of every creator and mystic and shamanic type in human history. It's not exactly fringe knowledge. It's a basic, driving, mobilizing understanding of humankind. And to the extent that we've ceased to understand or believe in a world beyond the obvious one, we are in trouble, from my point of view. I also knew from childhood that dreaming the future isn't weird or exotic, because I would see things before they happened and I could use the information. And I also knew, perhaps most importantly from childhood, that dreaming and imagination can get you through, because I stopped getting sick. I was terribly sick between the ages of 3 and 11. I had double pneumonia 12 times. I seemed to be allergic to life. And then it all stopped after a tremendous vision one day, and I didn't get seriously ill again, touch wood. And I know that there was a gift of the other world, a gift of connection with the deeper world through dreams and imagination that worked for me. And one of the things I do today is that I teach people in the most practical way, as well as the most thrilling way, to use these things to do better in life.
I think that is wonderful. And it is, I know today I was just sitting out outside because we're here in the Pacific Northwest, the sun finally decided to shine. And it was just wonderful. And when you are able to just sit within, let's say, a canopy of trees somewhere and feel the heartbeat of nature for a moment, it is absolutely invigorating. And I use that as a resonance, because when you are able to connect with that dream side, when you are able to recognize these various aspects that you mentioned, there is a harmonic in your life and an understanding in your life that you otherwise are denied, that can make you feel that your life doesn't have any purpose. And sometimes being able to be quiet long enough so that you can experience this and be aware of it is such a rich gift. I think that you're very blessed in so many ways.
Well, I think you put it beautifully, Donna. And by the way, you're also speaking about one of the the fundamental characteristics of the dreamer in indigenous societies. Dreaming for indigenous society isn't just about what happens at night, and it isn't just about what happens in visions or shamanic journeys. It's about living close to this earth and this sea and the elements around us and being in harmony with them and feeling with them and even speaking for them. It's about a state of consciousness, a state of connection with the animate world of nature as well as with the world of dreaming. And the two things go together and there's no contradiction between them, and you do both. Unfortunately, I couldn't have your hour outside like that today, because here in the northeast on the other coast it is fantastically hot and muggy and oppressive. So I tried to sit outside under the trees, under the honeysuckle for a while, and I started feeling quite queasy. So I couldn't have your connection. This is the time to be in the Pacific Northwest. You have it good.
Absolutely.
This time of year. It's the best place. Where you are is the best place to be this time of year.
It really is. It really is. But
yes,
I just have to chuckle because, you know, you count your blessings wherever they are.
Let's
go into becoming a frequent flyer. I love this title chapter.
Yeah.
I mean, the first thing you think of is the commercial on television with, you know, frequent flyer miles. This is what
right.
you're going to do, or whatever. But this is a different thing because dreaming has always been a part of my life. Vivid dreaming from as far back as I can remember. And this is something that took me many years to be able to understand its value. But that was part of my journey. I had to learn how to discover it and appreciate it and value it. And this is what you start off in your book. It's the very first chapter, in fact. And this a quote you have right in the front of that chapter by Dorothy Bryant is, "Tell me how to dream better, Sebastian. My kin, I've waited a long, long time to hear you ask that question. Simply to dream is not enough. There are many, many kinds of dreams. They exist, perhaps, on different levels." And that was a quote you took out of Dorothy's book, The Kin of Atta Are Waiting for You. Give us some insight.
Well, there are many levels of dreaming. And Dream Gates, the book that you're quoting, one of my seven books on what I call active dreaming, will take you through many houses and courtyards of dreaming, many more than are explored in that terrible movie Inception that people are talking about right now. But let me say that the start of it is terribly simple, and it's available to everybody. I mean, to start out as a conscious or lucid dreamer, what I prefer to call an active dreamer, someone who can proactively put themselves into a lightly altered state of consciousness and do interesting things, doesn't require any expensive technology. It doesn't require any strange potions mixed up in some remote place. It doesn't require equipment. It doesn't require boring mnemonic techniques repeated over and over in your head. It just requires you to be able to relax in the liminal state of consciousness that I call the twilight zone. This is when you're not awake and you're not asleep. You're approaching sleep, but you're not there yet, or you're in between sleep and waking in the middle of the night, or it's when you've just first woken up in the morning and you have a few minutes to laze in bed and images are with you. Spending more time in that zone, for which the fancy word is hypnagogia, the liminal state between sleep and waking, is a very good way to become more conscious of your ability to see images behind closed eyelids and to travel into those images and let them become full-blown dreamscapes if that interests you. It's a wonderful zone. In my book, The Secret History of Dreaming, I call this state the solution state when it comes to the history of science and invention and other modes of discovery, because when I look at it deeply, don't forget I'm a professor of history as well as other things, so I know how to do proper research. When I look at the history of those things, history of creative breakthroughs, I find that many people have received their creative breakthrough, made the connections that eluded them in waking life when they've been in that drifty in-between state, for which there's an old French word that I love, dorveille. It literally means wake dream or sleep-wake. It literally means sleep-wake, dorveille. It's a nice name for that in-between liminal state of consciousness. So that's one of the places you can go, and it's not very difficult to do it. I mean, that's one of the ways you can start becoming a more active dreamer.
Let's take the, again, you've got many different aspects here. You talk about the conscious dreaming. You talk about, in your third chapter in the book, your dream library. Go into that a little bit.
Well, first of all, there's a general concept that in dreams we have access to knowledge beyond what is available to the ordinary mind. And in our night dreams, we might find ourselves opening a book, literally or symbolically, and becoming aware of information we don't otherwise have. You can talk about this as access to the Akashic Records, or access to the quantum information field, or access to the collective unconscious, depending on your vocabulary. What I teach in Dreamgates, as in my workshops, is that you have the ability to make a conscious, wide-awake journey of the imagination to a fascinating creative locale, which you can think of as your dream library. For example, to approach this at its simplest, you take a life memory. You remember that library or museum where you were thrilled with excitement when you discovered new ideas or new images. You make it your intention in your conscious mind, your drifting conscious mind, to go there again and find something beyond what you know, and maybe meet a teacher, and maybe open a book and find that magically it opens to you a body of knowledge beyond the book itself. This would be your dream library in the sense of a conscious locale you can visit again and again and again. In my workshops last weekend in New York City, I took groups of people into a dream library, and they brought back wonderful gifts. Would-be writers in the gathering brought back pages and titles and publishing details of books they haven't written yet, and had encounters with characters who resembled well-known writers of the past with whom they identified. I'm not saying they met the spirits of those writers, I'm saying they met something of the essential energy of those great writers that could inspire them. Just as over the years I've had multiple meetings with my version of William Butler Yeats in a library of this kind. So this is the kind of exercise, a journey into the imagination, which we can learn to undertake, and it's one of the gifts of this book, Dreamgates, that it opens the doors of this kind of place to people to go and have some fun and bring back some creative ideas.
This, I think, is very significant. So many times, I know in my personal experience, when I try to, as my husband will describe it, become logical. And there's a joke in our family that Donna is as illogical as anybody could ever be. And my husband is just the opposite. He is so left brain. It's absolutely marvelous. Now, he's also creative in a way too, but he said, I can go from A to Z, know exactly how I'm going to get there. And he said, I can go backwards, sideways. I can tell you exactly all of these details. You go from A to Z and you don't know how the blue blazes you get there, and you can go sideways, upside down, at every angle. You still get there. But he said, you could no more explain it than a man on the moon. He said, you're not logical. So we always have this discourse, and it's fun because it is amazing how when you can allow yourself the freedom of being able to integrate with this, I call it a greatness that is within the self, that gives you that expansion and awareness that you have access to so much that is right with you at all times. It's so easy to get so busy in this world of ours to watch all of the rhetoric and visual images of limitation that are put in front of you, and to be able to separate, like you suggest in this book, Dreamgates, which really is like an instruction book, and to be able to integrate some of the exercises that you have and
Scare people. If it's an instruction book, which I agree that it is, it's not like one of those instruction books that comes with a piece of technology which was clearly translated from a language other than English, which you cannot follow. I mean, as you know, I like good words.
Right.
I like wordplay. I like to entertain people, and I like to lift them up with the power of story and carry them along.
Sure.
In fact, I call part three a manual for the psychopomp. The psychopomp means the soul guide, and it is particularly an instruction manual on working with the dead, with the deceased, with visitations from the departed, and with traveling and escorting people to the other side of death. So yes, it is an instruction book, but as you know, I mean, I value story almost more than anything else. Story has the ability to take us directly to what matters. So it's full of stories.
Absolutely.
That will pick up people and inspire them.
Very, very much so. So all of this, these various things that we're discussing today will enable people, and they can choose. They can, that's the wonderful gift of your book. They can go through this book, and if they're like me, they'll have a little highlighter, and they'll say, this is of interest to me, or they'll make a mark. Books to me are friends. And when someone puts in the effort, as you have put in, to communicate certain concepts and ideas, there's a great deal in Dreamgates that allows you to explore. and it's safe. It's not going to cause you any harm. And you have the opportunity to choose. And you can spend whatever time you want on it, more or less. But it's like, keep it simple, keep it easy, and that's what you do. Now, you talk about journeying outside the body, and I have a dear friend that is one of the most impatient people I've ever known on this planet, and she's gone to classes to try to learn how to go out of her body, and I have to chuckle because I know what it is. She does it all the time, and she doesn't realize it.
Right.
But it's her being consciously aware that she's outside of her body. And I think people get caught up in a lot of, what do I want to say, confusion and illusion when it comes to this. Describe how you were able to develop this. And I know you've got your technique here in the book. And give us some information so people can become a little educated.
Well, let me make a general comment about the subject, then I'll happily respond to any detailed questions about my experience or techniques. It might sound contradictory given the radical adventurous material in a book like Dreamgates when you hear me say I'm not particularly enthusiastic about the effort to consciously project yourself out of the body and have OBEs and astral projection. Why not? Well, you'll understand one reason immediately. We do it all the time. I mean, we do it when we go dreaming. Dreaming is traveling in your sleep dreams now. You will travel outside your body, and you'll learn ways of understanding how you did this. And when you get more alert to what's going on, you'll notice that you didn't travel in disembodied form. You traveled in a subtle energy body that left your physical body and returned to it. One of the things that Dreamgates teaches, with a clarity lacking in most Western discussion, is the reality of energy bodies beyond the physical, and it describes what happens to them when you go around. It also suggests what I call flight security. If you're going to do a lot of travel, particularly conscious out-of-body travel, you better learn how to protect yourself, because there are bad neighborhoods out there on the astral plane, just as there are in this world.
Mm-hmm.
So what I teach people to do with more enthusiasm than traveling outside the body, which doesn't seem to me to be such an exotic thing, is number one, to travel in the mind without necessarily having a physical separation from the body, without necessarily losing awareness of the body, to go on a journey without necessarily cutting off from your body, and sustain dual or multiple consciousness. And then I teach them to do what we could call mental expansion or mind expansion. You were talking about something analogous to this earlier on, Donna, which you expand your consciousness to include, to bring within it what you want to know and understand. That is both a very safe way of approaching these things and a way that the greatness of yourself, to quote you, Donna, approves of. I mean, you're expanding your consciousness rather than leaving your body in order to go and have a trip. So there are lots of techniques in Dreamgates and in my other work for taking you beyond the realm that you know into other dimensions across time. It depends what your interest is. You'll be guided by your interests, your desires, your curiosity. What do you want to know about? You want to know what happens beyond death? The Dreamgates will tell you how to do that, how to travel beyond death yourself safely, have timely and helpful communication with people who live on the other side of death and come back with gifts that you can use. You want to know about your connection with lives lived in the past or the future, with the truth of reincarnation for you, with your connection with a larger self. The book offers you techniques to explore all of those things safely. And all of these techniques essentially come down to three things, Donna. The first is having a clear and strong and necessary intention. Having a clear intention. Secondly, having a gateway image for preference, a portal through which you can travel on the journey of consciousness on which you're embarking. What image, what dream will take you there? And thirdly, having a simple mode of relaxation and focusing your perhaps otherwise divided attention so that you will have the fuel and the focus to make the journey. Again, I'm making it simple because fundamentally the important things are much simpler than people who don't understand them very well tend to make them out to be.
I agree. Your chapter about the wings of the shaman, I thought was very beautifully presented. I love the stories in there because each and every person, it's been in my experience, and I'm sure it's been in yours, has their own particular mind modalities. And they will, as a person grows and expands, they will grow and expand and shift and change. And you have a wonderful section in here on animal guardians.
in some cultures are called totems. There's all kinds of images here. And I just thought you had such wonderful stories to share regarding this particular exercise. Let's go into that for a moment.
Well, primal dreamers, indigenous dreamers, understand that one of the gifts of dreaming and one of the modalities of dreaming is that you develop close relations with dream animals, animal helpers, animal guardians, power animals who assist you, who show you things, and whose friendship may have to be paid for in the sense that the first time that they appear, for example, they might scare you and you might have to learn to develop some courage in order to deal with them. Though you might not be scared by the first encounter with a rabbit or a deer, you'd probably be very scared if you're meeting a tiger or a wolf for the first time or a shark. So that developing a strong relationship with a fierce animal guardian, one that is fierce in the wild, might require an act of courage. When I was first living in this country, I started dreaming of the bear, and the bear was in my space. The bear was enormous. It wasn't attacking me, but I was nervous because I was in the presence of something so much bigger than I was. I grew up in a country, Australia, that doesn't have native bears. It has koalas. They're cute. They're not bears. And I don't remember dreaming of bears like this before I started living in North America. I finally decided I'd better go back into one of these dreams and confront the bear and see why the bear recurringly was in my space. I did that simply by sitting in an easy chair, picturing the last dream in which the bear had appeared, and making it my intention to go inside that dream space and confront the bear. I was there right away. The memory was strong. The bear was there in all of my inner senses. I could smell him. His smell was rank and feral, and he was enormous. And it took an act of courage to brave up and step right up to the bear and let him embrace me, thinking at the time he's going to crush my ribs. He embraces me. We are now the same size. The bear wants me to look at my heart area, and I notice when I do that, the bear and I are joined at the heart by something like a thick umbilical pumping life energy back and forth. I don't understand this in a rational sense. It follows the logic of dreams. But following the logic of dreams, what I knew in that moment, Donna, was I was connected to the bear at the heart, and I knew I had found an ally in healing for myself and others that would not fail me, and that has proved to be the case ever since. So now in North America, when I convene a circle that has anything to do with healing, and all of them do, we sing a Native American song, a Mohawk Indian song. I learned the Mohawk language because of my dreams, which is a further story, to call the power of the bear as medicine and protector into the circle. So that's an example of an acquaintance with an animal power which was invited in the sense that the animal came to me before I agreed to meet him and also required some action, an act of courage in order to claim a gift of healing. In everyday dreams and every night dreams, and people all over are dreaming of animals quite frequently. Children dream of animals a great deal, but so do adults. The state of the animals in our dreams can often reflect the state of our health or our energy. You know, the horse is sick and underfed. That might be saying something about the state of our energy or our body. The lioness is there on the porch, but she's asleep. That might be saying something about a power of us, perhaps in the woman. There's like the lioness, and it's there, but it's yet to be awakened. So I find that working with animals in dreams, in spontaneous sleep dreams, and as a conscious exercise in raising energy and finding the natural pathway of our energy is a most interesting and productive exercise.
I agree. And I think it gives an insight if we are willing to investigate. And that's why I wanted you to share your story, because you have given demonstration through your story of how this affected your life and how you've been able to incorporate that self-awareness and, as you describe it, the power of the bear. And for some that are listening to this, this may sound a little bit woo-woo and a little bit mystical, but it isn't. Because we're connected to everything in life, and everything is connected to us. We're all of the same stuff, if you will.
I think, Donna, before we use the term, before we suggest that people might find it woo-woo or mystical again, and I like the way you're talking, no problem with that, Let's just note something else about the fellow you're talking to. I'm a former professor of history. I'm a former investigative journalist. I was a war correspondent in Vietnam. I've been around. I know the world, and this stuff has kept me alive. This stuff saved me from death on a road outside Phnom Penh when the Vietnam War spread to Cambodia. In another of my books, The Secret History of Dreaming, which is just coming out in trade paperback, I tell the story not taught in our schools or our academies or commented on by our media by and large, of how dreaming has been central to great lives and great events in every area, including war and science and religion and creativity, how dreaming is part of our evolution and gets us through. Anybody listening to me will know immediately this guy is not some woo-woo, you know, fringe New Age flake. Mm-hmm. I know my stuff, I do my research, and I approach this not only as a portal to a larger life, a more generous life where we get in touch with our greater story and have amazing fun and adventure in other realms, but as part of our essential human survival kit. And if we're missing that, we're missing out on a great deal. I can tell you, Donna, that men in combat, men in war, and I've been with them, know the importance of dreaming. It can save your life.
I know. I have a brother-in-law, but that is exactly what happened with him.
So we don't have to suggest that people are going to find this woo-woo. It's not. It's the reverse.
That's absolutely, absolutely true. Well, you have listened to Robert. His book, Dream Gates, Exploring the Worlds of Soul, Imagination, and Life Beyond Death. He's had other publications. This one, I think, is a wonderful book to have. And you can just read it and explore in your own personal space for your own personal experience. And he gives workshops. There's so many things you can find out about Robert. Go to his website, mossdreams.com. That's M-O-S-S dreams.com, and you'll find out more. Robert, it's been an absolute delight having you as a guest. Thank you so much, and I wish you continued success.
You're a dream host, Donna. May your best dreams come true.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Don't forget to check out Dream Gates and his website, mossdreams.com. We'll be back in just a moment.
Donna Sebo has a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Welcome, my lords and ladies, to the Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair, located at Marist Farms in Buckley, Washington. For 3 weekends in August, starting August 7th and 8th, we will transport you back to the days of old, where magic and merriment reign. Come see the multitude of musicians, dancers, jugglers, gypsies, peasants, nobles, pirates, and prestidigitation. That's magic for you commoners. Learn to swing a sword or shoot a bow and be knighted by Her Majesty the Queen. Hold your breath as jousters wheel their mounts around to engage in full contact combat on the field of battle. Sign on to sail the seas with scurvy pirates, or sit down with friends and family for turkey legs and a fine brewed ale. Delights abound for the young and old at the Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair, so come one and all, starting August 7th and 8th, for fun and excitement, and may your day be fair. For tickets and info, go to www.washingtonfair.com.
Hello and welcome. This is Donna Sebo, and telephone lines are now open. If you'd like to call in and chat with me today, I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Here is the worldwide toll-free number of 888-815-9756. And if you're a first-time listener, all you need to do is give me a call. I'd love to know your first name or initial. That's all. And then after that, you are welcome to sit back, listen to what I have to share with you in the way of insight, and then you'll have an opportunity to ask a question about anything that is of significance to you. So, during this next half hour, 888-815-9756. Also, you just heard the ad about the Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair. My goodness, it's just coming up so quickly. And it is going to be the first three weekends in August. I have two tickets left. And so if you are in the state of Washington and you would like to get a free pass to this wonderful event, it's a family pass, then call me at my office, 800-872-8852, or email me, Donna@DelphiInternational.com. That's Donna at Delphi, D-E-L-P-H-I, International, the whole word, .com. And I will also encourage you, if you've had a psychic experience, one you would call paranormal that had a strong impact on your life, won't you send it to me? I'm putting together a book where I'm collecting 100 stories, and I would love to have yours. So if you'd like to be included, whether it's been an out-of-body experience, a dream experience, you know, clairaudience, clairsentience, I don't care. It doesn't make any difference to me. What it means to me, though, is that it's your story, and I would love to see your story in my book. So give me, again, the information, and be sure to put your contact information in the email, Donna@DelphiInternational.com. Okay, I wanted to share with you a little bit of a story here that I thought was fun. It's about Mel Brooks. Now, you may or may not have heard of him. He has done a number of movies. He's quite well known in the industry, but he's also known for being a little bit childish in his behavior. And while he was directing the producers of the movie itself, the producers, this was back in 1968, Mel Brooks decided that he was going to rant and rage at the actors because they just weren't performing up to par. Now, this was a habit patterning of his. He'd have these temper tantrums and just totally be out of control. And you can imagine how awful that would be to just have to listen to that kind of nonsense. And since this was something that many people had seen him do over the years, there was an actor in this movie. His name was Zero Mostel. He watched this nonsense, and it really is nonsense when people are having tantrums like that, and he wasn't impressed with it at all. He left the set, heading for the exit. And, of course, this distracted Mel Brooks, and Mel Brooks immediately stopped his tirade and asked him where he was going. And Mr. Mostel replied that he was going to his dressing room until Brooks' tantrum was over. Well, Mel Brooks was just absolutely amazed. No one had ever talked to him like that. So this is what Mel Brooks said to him. He said, "You mean you'd let this entire production come to a standstill until my tantrum is over?" And Mr. Mostel looked at him and said, "Yes." And then Mel Brooks did something that no one had ever seen him do. He smiled. And he said, "My tantrum is over." Now, what was going on here? Each of these men were very skilled and talented at what they did. But Mostel was not going to let Mel Brooks, who he considered a bully, get away with the nonsense. He called the bully's bluff. And Mel Brooks was one who knew exactly what he was doing and knew that when you go to an extreme like he was doing for an effect and it doesn't work, you better pay attention and make your retreat. And I thought that was a great story. How many of you have encountered bullies in life? I have. And I can remember, I had been taught when I was growing up, you were always to be courteous and nice to someone. And you were never to talk back to an older person. And one of my most vivid experiences, I was in my early 20s, and I was in this group at this particular church that I was participating in, and there was a woman in the group. She had to have been in her 60s. She was a racist of racists. And in the choir, she was a member of this choir and had been for a few years. she did not want a black person in the choir. She had such an attitude about this. And I can remember listening to her ranting and raving, and I spoke up. And I'll never forget the experience because everything I had been taught, I threw out the window. And I was quivering inside because it was a show of disrespect for an elder. But I felt she didn't deserve respect, that her behavior and her demands were absolutely unconscionable. And I told her so. I said she didn't have the right to do this, that this person had the right, they had a wonderful voice, and that she did not have the right to speak about this individual as she did. They more than qualified to be a part of this choir group. Well, she went around and she blackballed me the best she could. But people listened to her, but yet they said, gee, we wish we had had your courage. And that was a very valuable lesson to me. There are times we have to stand up to behavior that is very, very wrong, inappropriate, and wrong. And that means sometimes we have to go against the flow. Now, I used my simplistic example, but this can happen at any time in life. When things are done mindfully that are inappropriate and other people accept it. And that's what this woman had done for so many years. She had bullied people. She didn't like me at all, and she never ever talked to me again. I didn't miss it. That's okay. But that's what we have to remember. Life is a teacher. And if we are willing to learn, then we're going to find ourselves benefiting in ways we could never, ever have imagined. And one will realize that sometimes things that we have been taught, we have to look at from a different view. It's not unlike dreaming. We have a different perspective. We have to learn more about ourselves. So I just wanted to share that story with you. Because I think in many ways, we as a nation, and many times as individuals, are going through a form of bullying. And I think it's about time we stand up to the bullies. Don't you? One person can make a big difference, and you may be that difference. By the way, I have some good news that I wanted to share with you. I love statistics like this because it belies what a lot of people try to sell. And I wanted to share with you that the American people, via texting, just texting, we're not talking about anything else, to the Haitian relief efforts, after the January earthquake, this number, this is just part of what has been donated by Americans. This isn't all of it, just part. Texting, $43 million. They didn't have to give any of this, but they did. $43 million was sent over. Percentage of improvement in air quality nationwide from 1990 to 2008, 41%. How much stuff are we getting? We are participating and improving. And nobody ever wants to talk about that. They want to talk about everything we're doing wrong. Well, there's a lot of us out there that in our own way, we're making steps towards improving things. And guess what? It is showing up. It is showing up. But it takes a person choosing what they want to be involved with. Little tiny steps. And do you know that the percentage of 18 to 24-year-olds enrolled in college, which is a record high, and that's in today's economy, is 40%, even with the extremely high cost of college. It is valued, 40%. And percentage of eighth graders who scored at or above grade level or on standardized math tests in 2009, it's the highest ever with 73%. 73%. And there is a man, Matthew Lee. Don't ever think that one person cannot make a difference. This man has done something very special. He's an 18-year-old. He's fixed up and donated to foster children in the Seattle area since 2006. 400 bicycles. 18 years old. Nobody forced him to do it. 400 bicycles. A percentage decrease in the violent crime rate from 1999 to 2008. It's the lowest now since 1973, is 13%. Percentage decrease in U.S. traffic deaths from 2008 to 2009. It's the lowest since 1954, is down 9%. And the percentage of paper recycled in the United States in 2009, they don't have the stats for this year, the highest ever, 63%. That's how efficient we are becoming, more and more efficient. And this last Christmas, the amount Americans donated to the Salvation Army Red Kettle campaign in 2009, the most ever, was $139 million. And there are places that discontinued the practice, but nationwide, $139 million coins of all kinds dropped in that little red kettle. Hundreds of thousands of people made a difference. Don't ever think you don't count. However you choose to give to life, know that you do make a difference. And when one person plus one person plus one person plus one person does it, wow, it adds up. Interesting stats, don't you think? It's true. This is Donna Sebo, and we're going to be taking a break. Don't go away. We'll be back in just a moment. Don't forget you can call me, 888-815-9756. We'll be right back.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
Johnny finds himself at the entrance to a large open valley, framed by high mountains rich in the brown red colors of the earth. He stands in awe, even a little fearful of the mountain's great size. After all, he's just a little boy and not very tall.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling, and the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com. That 800 number again, 872-8852.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. Now, by the way, I always tell you if I'm going to be a guest on someone else's show that I will let you know. Well, this Friday, I'm going to be on with Artie. His nickname is Clear Artie. And you can check out www.srnsport.com. srnsport.com. Now, Artie is a guy who's really knowledgeable about sports, but we're going to be doing something a little bit different. I've been invited to be a guest on his show, and this is going to be around 2:10 Pacific time. So depending on where you are, just adjust your time frames. And it'll be before my daily show. So it's going to be just a nice little segment, and who knows, I may be chatting with Artie on a somewhat regular basis. So we have that opportunity that is opened up, and that is going to be this Friday. Well, I have a picture in front of me that I thought was absolutely incredible. And when I say it, I mean I'm looking at a green bus. It says the St. Louis Cardinals, or St. Louis Cardinals, however you want to pronounce it. But I could not believe the story that goes along with this image. Now, here is this humongous bus. It's covered with grass. It's actually growing on the bus. And in front of it is seated a guy with dark glasses, and he's wearing, yes, a grass suit. The grass is actually growing on the suit. Now, this was a promotional thing of type, and the grass is actually growing both on the living grass suit and the bus. They have to water this thing every single day so that it continues to grow. And it's really interesting to look at, because when I'm looking at it, it's not the same density all over the bus. It's just like you would expect in a backyard. You know, some areas the grass really grows well and others it doesn't. And this is just an absolutely incredible photograph. So if you ever have an opportunity to see this bus, take a picture of it, because who knows how long it'll last. But the guy in the green suit is really something else as well. Tomorrow we've got a wonderful guest. We're going to be talking about health. It's all about consciousness. Ivan Rados is going to be my guest. On Thursday, we're going to be discussing deja vu. Have you ever had the sense of being somewhere before, but you know you've never been there, yet you know it inside and out? I have friends that have been in places, and they said, you know, I knew exactly how to get to a location, and I had never been in this particular city before, but I knew how to get to XYZ. Well, Marie Jones is going to give us a little bit of scientific explanation for that. Deja vu again on Thursday, and then on Friday, we're going to be talking with a guest that we've had before, Stanton Friedman. Now, this is a former nuclear physicist who really loves exploring the unique, the unusual, and likes to go for facts. He's been featured on television a great deal. This book is a little bit different from his UFO features. This book, along with a fellow author, was put together talking about science and how science was wrong. It makes for fascinating reading. So we've got a great lineup of guests. Soon I'll be putting up the list of guests for the month of August. Yes, we're booked solid, and you can at any time go into vbsradio.com, Station 1, The Donna Sebo Show, and find out who our upcoming guests will be. There will be a short description of the topic that we will be discussing, and you're welcome to check in at any time to see if there are particular areas of interest that you have. So that's our lineup for this coming week. And just for fun, I just wanted to share another survey with you. Ah, yes, those people out there that just absolutely have to do this type of thing. One of them is an individual psychologist, Raymond Marr of York University. He said, you know, books have something to tell about the people that are reading them. So this is something, fellas, you might want to find out what your gals are reading to see if they're going to be of a particular mentality. And gals, you might have checked with the guys, because, or check someone's library out. What do they have in their library? This is what Dr. Marr said, that if people like thrillers, if they like thrillers to read, they say you're stress-proof.
What they found in their survey and their research, the thrillers with their roller coaster plots will take you to emotional extremes and keep you on the edge of your seat. And your attraction to nail-biting novels suggests that you have a high threshold for real-life scares. In other words, it takes a lot to ruffle your feathers. You're outgoing and you're a bit of a daredevil and you like being where the action is. Woo! Well, that's just one book of type. I know we're out of time. This is Donna Siebel. I'll tell you more about the types of books that people read. It'll give you an insight into someone, something to talk about, give you a little bit of extra ammunition regarding the human personality. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Wherever you are, whatever you do, remember you are significant. You do make a difference. And it's so important that you accept that about yourself and don't feel that you really don't matter much, because you do. And it can be a smile, it can be a penny in a red kettle. It doesn't make any difference. You're a contributor. Keep that in mind and keep on being who you are to the best of your capability. This is Donna Siebel. Talk with you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Siebel Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Siebel Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.